Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Second poteau, ah oui, pourquoi pas, et pourquoi oh. pas, et pourquoi pas la tentative de Willian.
Ouais.
Et le centre de Tierney au second poteau, et la casette.
Oh là 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 là,
oh, la finition du français.
Ah mais quel dommage, quel dommage.
Oh là 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 là.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, hello to you.
Hello to you. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right. Obviously, nobody's in particularly great form this morning, having witnessed what we witnessed last night at the Emirates.
No.
But hey, I think it could be an interesting talk, an interesting discussion, and things that might happen from this result.
I was going to say, it's sort of, for a fan, it's a horrible time to lose a game, right, on the eve of an international break, because it means you stew on it and, you know, you're sort of left to dwell on it. And I heard Mikel Arteta last night saying, I wish I had a game tomorrow, you know, so that I could put this right. But I actually think that, in a funny way, it comes at quite a good time for a coach, because there's 2 weeks of sort of forced introspection about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it is helpful to him and necessary almost to have some time to ruminate on the problems he's got with this team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's never a good time to lose. But I do think when you're kind of slapped in the face a little bit with some issues that have been ongoing for a while, to have a couple of weeks to sit down and think and to maybe discuss with your coaching staff and, you know, maybe some of the players as well, you know, about what they feel and what he wants to do with the team, it may not be the worst thing in the world to have these 2 weeks off. For us, of course, we're just going to have to, you know, keep fingers crossed that during the international break, nobody gets into any mischief, if you like, physically or otherwise. And we've got 2 long weeks to sort of dwell on what we've seen. But I think from a coach's perspective, it might be useful. So I think that's something we'll explore as this discussion goes on. We have to do the nuts and bolts, the meat and drink of the game itself, though, before we can get into the wider concepts of it. So where do you want to start with this? As I wrote in the blog today, if there's a positive to be had from what happened, and there really aren't very many, it's that, you know, if the decision not to change the team from Old Trafford was predicated on, you know, the players deserving their places in the team, by that rationale, then there are going to be changes for our next game, which can only be
11
changes, exactly.
Joe Willock's going to play every position. No, it's a fascinating game to analyse. I mean, the weird thing is, in Arsenal's last 2 league games, they got thrashed at home 3-0 by Aston Villa. And they went to Old Trafford and won for the first time in 400 years. And yet, weirdly, despite those two things, I think you can make a pretty good case that we sort of didn't learn a great deal about this team in either of those games. That everything that we kind of thought to be true remains true. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the sense that when we play big games against big opposition, we're more competitive. I think that's what we said on the podcast, and it's one of the themes that has emerged under Mikel Arteta in the nearly 12 months that he has been in charge. But I think one of the other issues that we're seeing is the fact that in games against, I don't know what way to describe teams like Aston Villa,
because it's
I don't want to be in any way disrespectful, because I think they deserved their win yesterday. They played really well. They've got some players who we know can cause us problems. You know, so I I don't want to say mid-table teams or lesser teams or anything like that, because I think these teams are on the same level as us, you know. But perhaps, what's the best way of putting this? Teams that traditionally aren't considered the creme de la creme of the Premier League, if you like. Is that a reasonable way of putting it? Against teams like Villa, against teams like Leicester, against teams like Brighton, you know, we have a problem. We have a problem. Mm-hmm. We've got a way of dealing with bigger opposition, which has been effective, and we've got some good results. Not all good results, but we've got problems in the way that we approach games against teams like this. And that, I think, is the thing that Arteta is going to have to go away and think really, really carefully about in terms of how he sets up his team and the approach that we take.
Yeah, I mean, I think one way of putting it is that we fare very well in games where we're kind of almost the underdog. I mean, that is how I see it, I think. And that these games where it's more of a level playing field, we are really struggling at the moment. And I think, you know, the team selection point is a really interesting one, because Arteta picked a team for Old Trafford that implemented that game plan that we're referring to, that we kind of know, you know, can get you a win on the narrow margins in these, inverted commas, big games. But I think it's interesting that he stuck with that exact team, and not just the personnel, but pretty much the exact way of playing for a very different fixture against a very different opponent.
I'm really curious as to what your thoughts are on why he would do that. Is it faith in the players that he has and the system that he has and the instructions that he gives them and the way he feels they can execute the game plan?
Yeah.
Or is it that he doesn't see any real difference between a Man United away and an Aston Villa at home? I mean, it can't be that, surely, because he must recognise that going to Old Trafford, where you haven't won in 14 years, is a very different thing to a game against Aston Villa at home, where you are expected, as Arsenal Football Club, to I'm not going to say dominate, because again, that sounds presumptuous, and it's not something that we've seen a great deal from Arsenal under Mikel Arteta. But traditionally, to win a game like this against a team who, you know, let's face it, just about avoided relegation last season. Now, they've done good work in the transfer business. They've brought in some good players. I think, you know, we know from experience that they have players who can perform against us. But, you know, this is a game that, as Arsenal Football Club, you're expected to win. You're expected to be proactive in terms of how you go about playing the game. And I'm finding it hard to square that circle when you look at the team selection.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. Like, does he think of it in the same way? I do think that, you know, the home and away sort of advantage and disadvantage has been somewhat eroded in this period. And maybe that partially explains why he's kind of sticking with the same unit in every single game. I was actually talking to Charles Watts before the match, because we were saying, you know, Joe Willock's unlucky not to be on the bench and things like that. And I was sort of saying, I almost feel like it feels like a physical decision. Like, it almost feels like Arteta's like, I want to keep these groups as separate as possible. I don't want to overload anyone. They've not had a proper pre-season. I mean, that's pure speculation on my part, but I do wonder if that is in his thinking, because, yeah, it is a curious one. I guess I'm settling on the idea that he just thinks this is the way he wants his team to play. It's kind of difficult to reach another conclusion, isn't it? That he thinks this is the correct shape for this team at this point in their evolution, because he keeps doing it.
Yeah, I mean, but do you think now, after what we saw against Villa and the performance, the result, the way it didn't work for us, the way that Villa were able to exploit our setup and our system, you know, fairly cleverly from the first minute, they were able to find space in behind, which is weird. Mm-hmm. And I think you can say that Villa had a very good night and we had a very bad night, and those two things can be true.
They're both true, I think.
Yeah. But also, you know, we are a bit rigid, and that is something that has been a common denominator in the questions that we've had, which we'll deal with. But, you know, there isn't a great deal of variety in terms of how we try and play the game. So what I'm wondering now is, will this be a kind of a moment when we're talking about Arteta going away to reassess? Is this a moment where he thinks, okay, the problem is they're not doing what I want them to do, so I've got to drill them even harder on what it is that I want? Or is it one of those where he steps back and takes stock and reassesses and says, well, maybe the players that I have in the system that I'm asking them to play in aren't capable of doing this, or maybe I need to do something different? Do you, where do you think this is going to go? Because the really optimistic part of me wants to believe that this is a kind of a watershed kind of moment for Arteta, mm-hmm. in that he is still a very young, inexperienced coach, and you know there is a need to still acknowledge that, I think. But you've got to learn from your mistakes, if you like. And part mm-hmm. of that is trying things differently, or acknowledging that some of the things that you're trying to do or that you think are true are not working.
Yeah, I think what's happened here is that Arteta, he only sort of went to this kind of shape after we lost the two games at the start of Project Restart. It was City and Brighton. Prior to that, he'd always played with a back four. And then he went to Southampton, played with a back three. And gradually that system evolved into what we see now. And I think that he won four games on the bounce with it when he first implemented it. And then it saw him through the end of the season, the games against Liverpool, you know, the FA Cup games, City and Chelsea.
Mm.
And I think to an extent it's become his de facto system. I think it's become a bit of a crutch, almost like a safety blanket. And I think, you know, he's leaning on it unduly necessarily at this point.
Right.
I think he needs to move away from it. But I think that, you know, it has sort of almost by accident become the way this team plays. And his, I'm surprised, actually, I have to say, by his unwillingness to sometimes divert away from plan A. I mean, even in the starting lineup against Aston Villa, while I accept it was successful against Manchester United, I did expect maybe a couple of changes. I mean, the ones I would have looked at were potentially Pepe on the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there was a very good chance, actually, that David Luiz would play the game, because I thought he was pretty good in midweek and he was pretty good against Leicester, and I thought he might play.
Mm.
No criticism of Rob Holding, but I just thought there's another dimension to the play potentially with Luiz. And do you know what? Even in central midfield, as good as Elneny and Partey were at Old Trafford, I wondered if it might be a game for something different, just because the challenge in front of us is so different. So in that respect, I was a bit surprised by the starting 11 and by the fact that poor old Joe Willock, who we're going to keep talking up as if he's Pele, but, you know, he did not even make the bench. I found that really odd, particularly when you had in the matchday squad, Elneny, Partey, Xhaka and Ceballos.
Yeah.
And you've got Maitland-Niles, who can cover that position as well. To me, that's overkill at that point.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that occurs to me is there is perhaps a reluctance to introduce variety. And I think Willock is an example of that, right? Because mm-hmm. you could easily have done without one of Xhaka or Ceballos or Maitland-Niles, who I know offers some defensive cover as well. Obviously, there is that element to having Ainsley on the bench. But even when it comes to substitutions, we didn't do anything with our substitutes that caused the opposition any kind of rethink. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I absolutely understood taking off Willian and Lacazette because they were both dreadful. I thought they were mm-hmm. both really poor, and we're going to get into, I suppose, individual performances as well as a collective one. So you put Pepe and Nketiah on, but it's like for like, right? And I know that we were hampered a little bit because we lost Partey at halftime because of the thigh injury.
Yeah.
But there is perhaps a tendency not to adjust the team too much. And one of the times that he did it recently was the Sheffield United game. you know, where he introduced variety into the tactical changes, the substitutions. Aubameyang went central and we turned around and we won that game.
Yeah, I thought he might do something as bold as that at half time because it was clearly a game that was sort of getting away from Arsenal. I mean, I do think the story, and it's, you know, it's what we're talking about here, is that Arsenal's problems going forward. I thought at the back they were really bad against Aston Villa, but I do think that that's relatively unusual in this Arteta team. I think that's the sort of element of the performance last night that was, you know, when Arteta says we weren't at the races, our concentration wasn't there, we were sloppy. I think you can apply that to the defence and say, well, in fairness, that's not really what we've been seeing from them recently. I think the reason that the attack has to be the focus of the conversation is because that is what we've been seeing. You know what I mean? For most of this season.
Yeah. You know, Arteta was talking before the game about, not for the first time in recent weeks, about our need to score more goals. And he said to
knows.
To become a top team, you have to score 90 or 100 goals to be competing with the top guns. It's a challenge for us and it's an area that we have to improve and do better. Yet the approach for a game like this was similar to what we saw when we went to Old Trafford, where the plan, I think, was, and it worked, to nick a win. Right? Was to
keep it very tight.
Keep it tight, nick a goal, you know, shut up shop, and go home happy with a big win away from home.
So, I think that is exactly what Arteta has almost tried to do in every game. If you look at it, really, if you look at the amount of shots each side has, if you look at the comparative XG of each team, that's how we play. We play to keep it tight and nick it. And as Arteta himself says, that's not something that's sustainable for big success in the long term. You know, that is it's a mark of a mid-table team. And that is what we are. I mean, look at our form, look at our results. But, you know, it's not what we should be aspiring to. I was struck, you know, Liverpool have lost Virgil van Dijk, right? They've lost their best defensive player. And what they've not done is think, okay, well, we'll put a third centre-back in to try and cover for it.
Yeah.
They're playing a fourth attacker. They're playing Jota, Firmino, Salah and Mane. Now, look, I know they're a very different side, but I do feel to an extent that the way we have been playing has become a bit of a crutch and that at some point, hopefully this point, we have to discard it.
Well, I hope so. It demands a rethink. It absolutely demands a rethink. And I'm sure there are layers of this that we're going to get into. And I do have some thoughts on this a bit later on. But let's
just quickly, though. I don't know if you wrote this morning because I've only flipped through it. But you sent me a text last night about a moment this reminded you of. And I thought it's an interesting one. So, yeah, it'd be good for you to repeat that for the listeners if you remember what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I was talking about the Wenger... the defeat to Blackburn pretty early on in Arsene Wenger's time at the club. I think it was his second season.
97, I think.
97, and we'd been beaten 3-1 at home by Blackburn. And look, very different circumstances. There was a much stronger senior element at the club, I think, because it was basically the back four. And they were talking about getting more protection from the midfielders, from Vieira and Petit, and obviously that was sorted out, and we went on then to win the double. And I realise it's different, but I do feel like there are times when, you know, a manager needs to listen to his players, you know, to get their insight. And, you know, the idea that a team meeting, if only we had Theo Walcott in the squad, he'd come out and tell us about the team meeting that they just had and everything was going to be great until the next time we lost, which is usually the next game. But, you know, that it feels like that kind of a moment where...
So you should ask Messer what he should do. No, I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, like, the... you're right, that team, that 97-98 team, obviously had that really solid core experienced professionals. I don't know if those characters to the same extent are in this Arsenal dressing room, but...
No, they're not, but, you know...
I agree with you in that... I think I said this last night, but Arsenal looked like a team kind of playing to their coach's idea, whereas Aston Villa looked like a team playing to their strengths, their talent. And I really do think that. I mean, I think it's funny, you know, Aston Villa come to the Emirates Stadium and they can give you a footballing lesson, but I think they can in some ways. If you look at the way in which they have kind of harnessed, you know, the attacking abilities of Grealish, Barkley, and the way they've kind of freed those players to play in combination. I mean, it was kind of one of the galling things about this game that we had to watch a team doing some of the things that we don't do, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And players who I think are allowed play with a little more freedom than ours are at this moment
in
time.
I mean, it's easy to say, let's buy Jack Grealish, but I think it's interesting to ask, would Jack Grealish have the freedom he needs in this system? You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Sure. I think that's a perfectly reasonable question. Let's get into some of the bits and pieces from the game itself.
Sure.
And I think there are wider things that we can explore after that. But early on, of course, we were 1-0 down very briefly until VAR ruled out McGinn's goal. I mean, that was a worrying goal to concede that early in a game. I mean, caught cold, absolutely caught cold.
And I think that was in Arsenal all night, to be honest, that kind of sloppiness.
Yeah.
And we saw it in the first 60 seconds. It should have been a wake-up call. It wasn't. I mean, you know, we lost a goal, didn't we, in similar circumstances against Leicester. So I guess it's consistent, but I did feel a bit for Villa. I mean, Bern Leno can have all the view he likes of that.
Still not getting anywhere near. No. Yeah, so look, a let off.
Emi Martinez would save it, of course.
Of course, yeah. Just stick out one big paw, he'd have got there, you know.
It was always going to be his night. We should have known, really. It's ludicrous, I mean, that we expected anything else.
We were talking about this, weren't we, on WhatsApp before the game. It was like, oh, we're just going to, you know, how are we going to deal with the Emi Martinez masterclass? He didn't really have a save to make. I was expecting one of those games. Maybe that's just shows where my mindset is. I thought it was going to be one of those games. Remember that game against Fulham years ago when Van der Sar, was it Van der Sar?
Yeah,
I think it was. Edwin Van der Sar made about 25 saves in the game. We just absolutely battered them. So it was, you know, maybe a bit foolish of me to think that we were going to do that. But it just felt like, well, Emi Martinez is going to come and he's going to make save after save after save. And he was really pretty untroubled, you know.
He was. When Villa had like a corner late on, I was thinking, I mean, if you're Emi Martinez, you might as well go up for this. It's your night anyway. Just go up and attempt a bicycle kick. It's probably going in the top corner.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, I mean, a bit of sod's law there. But yeah, we were really lucky to get away with that early on. And, you know, I thought, right, that could be a bit of a wake-up call. But it wasn't. And we continued to be really, really sloppy in possession.
Yeah, but we did have, I think, a really good chance.
Which one?
Willian.
I've not seen a replay of that. From where I saw that, that was not an easy one to hit. The second half one I thought was a better chance. But you tell me, because I've not seen a replay.
Let me just bring it up here again. But I watched it again this morning and I thought it was a very presentable chance. I'm just sort of fast forwarding.
The one that he skies at, like over the bar.
Yeah, miles over the bar.
Let's have a look. Aubameyang down the left.
Here he
Good
is.
Good pick out, actually.
Yeah, who was it? Partey, I think.
And boom, a good cross boom. From Oba.
I'm sorry. That's terrible. That's terrible. For a guy of his experience, I think that's really bad.
Okay. I'm probably alone in this, but I think that's not as easy as it looks. By the time he hits it, it's nearly at his waist. You know what I mean? Like, I think they look worse than they are. Like, if he makes the contact with the ball slightly differently, it doesn't balloon over. I think the one he had in the second half,
the left-footed one.
Yeah, I think that's a better chance, personally. But
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. I'd be interested to see what XG would score that, you know. But I think his most infuriating contribution was still to come.
You mean when he gave the ball away, which led to their goal?
Yeah.
I mean, go on.
I just think the defence of Willian is technical security, isn't it? And all I could think watching that was, I feel like if Pepe did that, he'd never play for Arsenal again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And if Pepe did that and then sort of ambled back and wandered around in the general vicinity of the ball while Villa passed it around and ultimately found the pass to the back post. I know Willian wasn't alone there, but I was like, you know, there was no desire. No desire to try and make up for the mistake. You know, Pepe would be on a plane back to Lille or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That does seem like real... I mean, if Willian kind of starts the next game, I do think at that point that feels a bit like double standards. I genuinely do. I mean, that is incredibly sloppy. I think he was like that all night.
Mm.
And I agree that he sort of looks unhurried off the ball.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's like he's herring back. I actually texted my brother,
yeah,
who has watched Willian play many, many times, and rates him. And I was like, he was watching the game, and I was like, what's going on here? Like, what do you... Is Willian... Is there something that he had at Chelsea that he doesn't have here? Like, is there a player he played off? Did they have a target man he was, you know, combining with? He was like, no. Everything is set up in such a way that he ought to be able to play. He was like, he's just playing badly. And I think that's the reality of it.
Yeah, and I think he's played badly all season. I think he had a good game on the opening day against Fulham, and since then has been verging between average and bad. And I think one of the issues that I have is that there is, you know, what you refer to as off the ball work is just bad. It's really poor. You know, this is a guy who knows what it takes to do it at Premier League level. He's won the Premier League. You know, he knows, even when you're playing, again, you know, a team like Villa, when you're playing the smaller teams, so-called smaller teams, you know, you will get punished if you switch off. And if you're not on it for 90 minutes, it only takes a second at this level, you know, for you to be exposed. And not for the first time this season, his off-the-ball work, his defending, his tracking of his man has been really bad. I think it's the kind of performance that requires him to win his place back by playing in the Europa League. I know he played in the Europa League the other night, but he played like a guy who just couldn't be arsed. It was like, I'm 32, fuck this. Fuck this. I think Tim Stillman said something quite interesting on the Arsenal Vision podcast. He said that, you know, in the Europa League game, David Luiz played like a guy who did not want to play in the next Europa League game because he wants to play in the Premier League, and Willian just coasted through it. I mean, it's beginning to look like a really, really bad deal. I said to you before the game, this guy needs a big performance tonight. He needs, well, at least a solid performance, a solid contribution, and this was potentially his worst game in an Arsenal shirt.
Yeah, I think it's been really disappointing. I mean, anyone who... You know, I think the only justification people could find for signing Willian was the idea that as an experienced Premier League player, he would hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And I think that actually was a reasonable expectation. You know, I do think if you look at his performances for Chelsea last season and think, if we could directly port that into this Arsenal team, I don't think that was a ludicrous, you know, idea that could work. But he is way, 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 way short of that at the moment. And, whether it's form or something mentally, or I don't know. But I agree with you at this point, you know, he probably needs to sit down and have someone else take that position in the team. I mean, another thing about Willian, by the way, is that when we signed him, one of the real things that I was like, oh, well, you know, that's a positive, set-piece delivery. But we haven't seen that at all from him.
No.
And we're even playing the slightly odd set-piece. Last night, we did a lot of sort of corner routines to, like, guys on the edge of the box to take a shot. And I was sort of like, well, we've brought a bloke in who's supposed to be able to, you know, deliver a good ball from wide, and we're not doing it. It just feels like an odd one. And, you know, I have no reason to believe this at all, but it does feel slightly like Arteta has hung his hat on that signing a bit in a funny way. Like, because it was expensive and it was a big deal and the club were criticised. It feels like there's a real desire to make it work and give him every single opportunity. But I'm not sure well, I am sure we're not getting the rewards at the moment.
No, absolutely not. He doesn't deserve to be in the team. He needs to sit it out, and somebody else needs to be given a go. And maybe that's a discussion that we can have in a bit. Another player who I think needs to sit it out now is Alexandre Lacazette. That was a glorious chance, you know.
Brilliant cross, yeah.
Brilliant cross from Tierney. He saw it all the way. The header was terrible. It's a really bad miss. That should be on target. It should be in the back of the net. The only way it shouldn't be a goal is if Emi Martinez makes an absolute world-class save, because from that distance and with that trajectory on the ball, with that pace on the ball, all it needed was for him to get that on target, and it's pretty much a goal. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. He's been playing like he's got lead in his boots, and my brother actually texted me about this and said he doesn't get off the ground at all for that header. And I know he doesn't have to, because the ball sort of drops on his head. But in doing that, it means that he sort of hits it with the top of his head. Like, if he attacked it, it's a goal. But he doesn't really attack it. And another point about the way we go forward, by the way, is that... So this is a huge moment in the game for me, because it is a golden chance. And as we know...
Just before half-time, yeah.
Yeah, when you're a team that plays with these fine margins, which unfortunately is what we are at the moment, these chances mean a lot. You know, they are big. And it's telling that in every single game at the moment, we fixate on one or two really big chances. Part of that is Lacazette's in bad form, he's not taking them. Another aspect of it is we don't create enough.
Yeah.
But a lot of these chances, it seems to me, are from crosses. And quite a lot of them are headers. And any statistician will tell you, you know, a header is invariably a worse chance than it looks. They're invariably quite low XG. And I do wonder, you know, when we think about the way this team attacks, the type of football we play, you know, one of the strengths even in recent weeks has been, okay, well, now we're getting Tierney forward. He's swinging in crosses from the left. But I'm not sure either Lacazette or Aubameyang are the guys who I want to be, like, jumping for a header. Do you know what I mean? It's not even their strengths.
We're playing to the strengths of Olivier Giroud.
We literally are. I mean, I found myself yesterday thinking, Giroud would be good in this system.
He would as well.
I really did. We've got a question actually later about, you know, about former players that we miss, but he's the one that jumps out. I mean, and that's, there's something not right about that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's easy, and I think it's fair to criticize individuals who are underperforming, and I think Willian is underperforming. You know, particularly in the context of his arrival and all the aspects, you know, surround him. Lacazette is also underperforming. There's no question about that. I think he's a player we should have tried really hard to move on and replace during the summer, but we didn't. We have to find a different solution now, I think, going forward, and I'm going to ask you about that now in a minute. But also, we have to acknowledge that within the system that we're playing, and what some of these players are being asked to do, like, obviously Lacazette is not being asked to head over from fucking 8 yards, but he is being asked to play in a way which, you know, I don't think really plays to the strengths that he has or used to have or might have had, right?
Yeah.
So I think there are individuals who are not performing, but we come back to the system, we come back to the approach, and we come back to how we're trying to play, how we're trying to create, how we're trying to... make opportunities for our forward players, and that I think is where the other element of this is. I think Arteta has got to reconsider personnel, but he's also got to consider the system and the way that the team are set up. So let me ask you this. I think a couple of weeks ago we had a discussion about Aubameyang playing as a centre forward, and we differed on it slightly. I was much more in favour of it, and you were saying that within the system that we play, would it be a panacea for all our problems? You know, I don't think it would be. But now I cannot help, James, but think that part of what we need to do is simplify things, make things less complicated, acknowledge that we have a world-class centre forward who is being wasted on the left, and we know he can score from there. We know that. But if we're talking about recalibration of our system and recalibration of the way that we play, our tactical approach to games, do you think that using him as the centre forward basically forces us to play in a different way? Because what Arteta wants from Lacazette in this system isn't what you should ask from Aubameyang when he's playing as a centre forward. So is that part of this rethink, if you like, that this fictional rethink that we're all hoping he will have?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about it, because I think basically, if you play Aubameyang in the role Lacazette is doing now, obviously that will be a bit of a disaster, right? But if you want Aubameyang to be your central striker, then I think you have to kind of start from that and develop and build the balance around it. You know what I mean? Which, given that you've given the guy, I don't know, a 300 grand a week contract for the next 3 years, building around him is not the worst idea I've ever heard. So, basically my opinion is actually still the same, in that I don't think it will be a panacea. Like, if Arteta doesn't change his other ideas and he just picks Aubameyang at centre forward, I think we'll have similar problems. He might score some of the chances Lacazette misses, but I think we'll have similar problems. I do think to make it work, you kind of have to rebuild the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is probably where we are. I'm not saying as well, by the way, that we should throw the baby out with the bathwater. I do think that this approach we have for big games is not something we should set fire to or chuck away or forget about. We can return to that at any point when it's appropriate. But I think, as we were saying at the top of the show, the problem is the fact that it's become the approach for every game.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, why do away with something that is effective? You know, you go to Old Trafford, you win. You've won the FA Cup playing in a certain way. You've taken on big opposition. You've won those games playing in a certain way. That's great. You know, it's good to have found, I'm not going to say a solution, but it's good that we are more competitive in games that for seasons now we have not been competitive in at all, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. That is a good thing. I think you're right, though, that the issue isn't, we shouldn't just, like, throw it to wherever. What's the word I'm looking for here? Just fucking chuck it out. There's no need to do that. Keep that, but then find a way to play in the other games, which is more effective, right?
Yeah, or give yourself the opportunity to change that even within a game. Do you know what I mean? I mean, we're talking about how, you know, the tactics feel a bit stale. I mean, that is the thing. I don't think anyone can say it never worked, what we're doing now. It did, because it caught people by surprise. It was unexpected. People weren't wise to what Aubameyang was doing from the left. I think what we were doing in the wing-back and full-back areas felt very innovative. And crucially, it was different to anything Arsenal had really produced in some time. It was so much more structured and disciplined. But it's been 6 months, or whatever it's been, and teams, I think, are wise to it at this point. And that's what happens, you know? And I think the advantage, the competitive advantage it did give us, has been eroded, essentially. Yeah. And that's what requires a step, a change from the manager. And I thought, you know, we've reached kind of half time in the chronology of the game. I thought we might see a bit of a step or change then. And I was a bit disappointed, really, that we didn't.
Well, I mean, obviously the substitution of Partey was forced because of the injury. I saw Ceballos coming on and I was like, oh, who's going off here now? Which one of the players is going off? And obviously it was, you know, it was the injury that caused that change.
I thought they were doing the board in the tunnel and I was sure I saw Rob Holding's number come up. And I was like, oh, that's I think I almost texted saying, oh, I think it's Rob Holding. And I thought, that's interesting. You know, that's definitely going to change the shape. I wonder what we're going to do.
16 blah, blah, blah. Versus 18, I guess. Way the light was shining, yeah.
So it was, as it turned out, it was obviously Partey and he was injured and that was a real blow. You know, I think he was one of the better players, I guess, in the first half from an Arsenal perspective. He is one of the better players in the team, probably. So that was a real blow. But I mean, I agree with you that in the first 45 minutes, I don't think either Lacazette or Willian had done a great deal to justify staying on the pitch, especially in the case of Lacazette, where you kind of know well, in about 10 minutes, his race is going to be run anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. But what do you do there? I mean, do you, you know, I suppose you could put Pepe on for Lacazette.
Yeah, I was thinking that, I thought Ceballos would come on. I was thinking Ceballos and Pepe are probably the players that you would get on here. And look, Pepe did get on. When did, was it about the hour mark when he actually came on?
Yeah, they're thereabouts, I think, maybe 60-odd minutes. I'll have a look at the live blog here and it'll it'll tell me when things were happening. And I thought, actually, in the first couple of minutes after those two came on, there was a little bit more...
Well, I agree. Pepe did more in his first...
65 minutes.
Yeah, in his first 5-10 minutes, you know, he flashed, I think, a shot wide across the box. And I was like, well, there's a glimmer of end product here. You know?
Yeah, there was a shot, and I think there was a nice pass from Bellerin through to Nketiah, who turned out to be offside. But, you know, there was a bit of something there. And then, of course, we switch off for their goal.
Yeah, yeah.
When was
this?
That
is the
goal?
One which is the the Douglas Luiz long pass and then nice touch from Ross Barkley across to the centre forward.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the performance of Ollie Watkins I thought was a really interesting comparison, wasn't it, with Lacazette? You know, the energy, the movement. Every aspect of his game on the night was really impressive, and it just gave them a dimension in attack that we didn't have.
A couple of weeks ago, I think myself and Lewis did a Lewis Ambrose did a podcast for the Patreon, the Tactics podcast, and we talked about players causing the opposition problems. And Watkins caused our defence all kind of problems, as did Barkley, as did Grealish, you know. And we just did not have those players in the team. We had two players who, in Willian and Lacazette, were probably just the easiest time that the Villa defenders will have had to deal with. You know, I know there was the Lacazette chance, but you know, the physical side of football is so important. And when you're look, Willian is 32, so he's not going to be a 90-minute sprinting around the place player. That's something you must know when you sign him. Lacazette has never been a 90-minute player, and Lacazette looks leggier and slower and sluggish than he ever has done. You know, so you're kind of at a physical disadvantage when you're playing two guys like that who are playing the way they are.
Definitely, definitely. And Watkins's mobility, you know, made a massive difference to Villa. And one of the things you think about this Arsenal attack, I mean, we've all spotted the five channels that they play in, but Arsenal at times very literally kind of stay in their lane, you know? And it leads to a degree of predictability. I mean, I talked about this last night as well, but Mikel Arteta's going to hate it when crowds come back into stadiums.
Yeah, I thought maybe we could keep that discussion for the second part of the show, but we're here and we might as well do it. You know, I saw your tweet about how he is basically micromanaging the players from the touchline. And that's something that we've been kind of, in some ways, enamored of. You know, look at the way he's doing it, look at the way he's coaching players through the game. And when it works, it's great. But now we have a whole pile of questions from people about, you know, whether this is a problem, whether the structures are too rigid and all that. But I'll come back to that. But I think one of the other things that struck me about the absence of fans is that when we go back to this idea of Mikel Arteta seeing what he saw from his team and then thinking, oh shit, I really need to have a serious think about this and the way things are going. This is not... this is not like a one-off, right? In terms of like the level of performance and how bad it was, it kind of is a bit of a one-off, you know, in just how poor we were. But it's not as if those issues haven't been present in previous games.
I think it's a one-off on the defensive side, but not on the attack.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, if fans were in the stadium, this is something that would have been building, you know, the reaction to aspects of our game. Like when we move the ball forward and then check back and go backwards, and there isn't enough thrust and there isn't enough incision in how we're playing. When 60,000 people are frustrated by that, that's something that transmits itself from the stands to the players, to the manager, who may still very much believe in what he wants to do, right? But he can't ignore the reaction of the fans. Do you know what I mean? Like, will it have had an effect on his thinking more quickly if there had been disgruntlement from the fans? And I'm not saying it's like booing or anything like that. But, you know, you get the reaction. It feeds into how you feel about the game. But there's literally nothing, no kind of feedback. He's not on social media, so he's not like reading Twitter to find out what people are thinking. It's not that he's not analyzing the games, but he's analyzing it from within a very quiet bubble with his coaching staff. And I do wonder if fans had been in the stadium for all this time, whether the cautiousness would be quite as pronounced as it is.
So I think it's really difficult, because I do think that fans are a big ingredient in a game. And I think almost all our home games would have a sort of wildly different sort of orchestration with fans there. You know, I don't know if Aston Villa, for example, produced the performance they do in an empty Emirates Stadium. I just think it does change the dynamic. Look at the home and away results, right? Fans make a difference, clearly. I also think that fans don't always know best. And I say that as a fan. I mean, how many times have I been at the Emirates Stadium and the fans want Granit Xhaka to shoot from 40 yards out or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. You know, fans don't always know best. And we, I think Arsenal have also benefited from that sense of calm. I think that some of the defensive improvements, some of the improvements in playing out from the back may not have been possible in that environment. But certainly, you know, if I think back to the Unai Emery era, and granted, I think there's more patience and goodwill towards Mikel Arteta, I do think that, you know, there would be frustration, undoubtedly. That's the way it goes. Whether that would change Arteta's thinking, I don't know. He strikes me as a very stubborn man.
Sure. Look, I think you're right. He's methodical and he believes in what he's doing. But when you get feedback, visceral feedback on what your team is producing, and when there's a complete absence of that, I just wonder, does it, you know, is he missing something? Like, we're missing something as fans not being there, and the team is missing something as fans. And we've talked about, like, how we haven't been able to share in these brilliant moments, like winning the cup and turning the end of last season into something hugely positive. But I'm wondering if, as a manager, he is also missing something that could be really important for him in terms of his learning and what he's doing in, you know, the first stages of his managerial career.
Maybe. I mean, you know, I say fans aren't always right. They're also not always wrong. And I think, you know, there is something to be said for that. I also think that it's something for the players, you know. Undoubtedly, there's an adrenaline to playing in front of fans like that. And something I've really noticed about this Arsenal team is that we don't, in the second half, we never sort of turn the screw. It never feels like pressure mounts. And maybe this is romanticism on my part, but I do feel that, like, so often when that happens, the crowd is almost part of that, that they kind of play their role in dictating the tempo. There's a sort of reciprocal relationship between team and supporters. Maybe it feels like things never reach that kind of temperature. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 I know exactly what you mean. I think this is ultimately it's detrimental to the game on all kinds of levels, you know, financial and everything else. But I just think in terms of how games play out. Like, I was watching the game on Premier Sports last night. I didn't have to do the pay-per-view thing. So it was on Premier Sports here over in Ireland. And it was the fake crowd noise again. And it was just trying to separate that from what I was seeing, you know, because the sounds of what I was seeing weren't what I was experiencing. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I think but the reason I said what I said about Arteta's going to hate it when crowds come in is because, like I say, he does this kind of micromanagement, you know. And who knows if the players are listening when he says, give it to him, move here, move there. Who knows? But one thing is for sure, when that stadium is full, that will not work. Like, he will have to let go control in to that degree. He cannot, you cannot audibly coach your team through 90 minutes in a full Premier League stadium.
Yeah.
It is impossible. So what he's doing is not sustainable. Do you see what I mean? Like,
even
if it was working, at some point you have to trust the players. And I do feel like that's kind of the difference between Arsenal and Aston Villa last night, that there was a lot of faith and trust placed in some of their attacking players and maybe not the same extent to Arsenal's.
Okay.
So the second goal, they score, blah, blah, blah. They score again very quickly, didn't they?
Bad defending, you know, on the second goal. We didn't close them down quickly enough. I don't think Nketiah did enough at the back post to stop Barkley and Watkins.
Bad defending, you know, all the goals. On the first goal even, you know, we got our offside trap all kinds of wrong. Villa were playing so slow, and yet we didn't read it at all.
Mm.
So look, we made them look good too. But, you know, they were ruthless and they took their opportunities.
Mm. I don't know what more we can say about the game itself.
No, I mean, I don't either, really. I mean, I suppose it's only worth saying there wasn't a great deal. Like I say, we never really built that momentum. I mean, there were like little chances here and there. Rob Holding, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, sort of left foot. I mean, there are a couple of things that, when you think back on them, tell you a lot about the Arsenal performance. One is that Gabriel created a chance for Rob Holding when there was fuck all going on in the attacking end of the pitch by players perhaps more capable of doing that kind of a thing. And the best individual moment from an Arsenal perspective was, if not Kieran Tierney's cross, it was Dani Ceballos making a brilliant clearance off the line. You know?
Yeah. That was, I mean, a brilliant piece of play from him. I mean, I saw, you know, I know people have different degrees of faith in things like XG models, but I saw that it finished 1.4 to Arsenal to 1.9 to Aston Villa, which suggests the gulf wasn't quite as wide as it felt in the moment. It certainly felt wide to me. But I also think it means that I think we are right as well to look at moments like that Lacazette chance and think, you know, given that we're not a team that creates enough opportunities, it's so essential that we're clinical when we get them. And that we create more.
Yeah, well, obviously that we create more. That's a big, big issue. But just before we go into the break, do you feel like maybe the players know we don't create a great deal, so when the chances come, there's more pressure? Is that unreasonable, or is that just kind of making excuses because Lacazette should score from 8 yards out?
Yeah, I kind of think he should just score. I mean, I don't know if... I mean, clearly, he's out of form, right? And that can have its... You know, form is a very real thing for strikers. You know, I think that form waxes and wanes and he's in a bad place at the moment. But I don't think you can place too much emphasis on the pressure element. I still think you've got to do better there.
Mm.
And, you know, the same probably applies to Willian with his chances. But I do think that it's a tricky one. You can really fixate on those opportunities, but then I think you also have to ask the question of why are you doing that? And the answer is because there are so few.
Mm. Okay, look, let's take a break. There is more to get into, I think, in part two, when we will answer some of the questions that people have sent to us. So stick with us. We'll be right back. That's it. We'll be right back. That was terrible.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsblog, and on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. Lots of very similar sounding questions. Do you want to go first on one? And yeah, I'll see if I can find one with an element of variety.
So this is from Clarkenwell Guna, who's at Rational Arsenal, and they ask, which factor is contributing the most to our struggles in the attacking department? Arteta being shackled by the players at his disposal, or the players being shackled by Arteta's system?
The second one.
Well, do you want to explain that?
I think that we're not set up in a way which makes me think we're prioritizing the attack. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So I think what he's struggling with is he's... The first thing he wanted to do when he came in was make the team more solid.
Yeah.
I feel like he's finding it hard to get rid of that or to shake that off a little bit. And I understand it to an extent. I think what he's trying to do is make the team or maintain the solidity defensively in that, you know, we don't concede the same amount of chances that we used to, et cetera, et cetera, and find a way of making the team more attacking while maintaining that. And I think he's going to have to let go very slightly of some of that defensive solidity. And I think that's a bit scary.
Do you think he's... So, because I can kind of put myself in his shoes and think maybe he's worried that if he kind of takes the handbrake off, Arsenal will lose the defensive strength they've had.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you might score a couple of big defeats and suddenly it feels like everything you've built is gone.
Yeah, look, I can see why he would be cautious about it. I can see why he would prefer to maintain the defensive solidity and add attacking potency. That would be the ideal, wouldn't it? But that's maybe a little bit down the line. That's maybe when you've been in the job for a bit longer and you've had more transfer windows and you've been able to build a squad which is better able to do both those things. But I think when you're a team that struggles to create chances. I mean, he said something. I was watching his interview with the official website, with Arsenal.com, after the game, and he was talking about, he was obviously really, really pissed off, and it was quite apparent how angry he was about things, but he was talking about, you know, the various aspects of the game and not creating enough chances and being defensively poor, and he just called it a terrible combination of things, you know? But he has to find a way to make the attack better, and if that comes at the expense of some of the defensive solidity, I think that's probably a trade-off we need to make at this point. I think he also needs to get more out of his best players, his best individuals. And this is why I come back to Aubameyang in the centre. It's why I would give Pepe a run of games. Because I think he's a flawed player. He's not the player perhaps we thought we were getting. We've overpaid for him and all of those things. But when it comes right down to it, he can produce. He can make assists. He can score goals. He can, at times, do things that other players in the team can't do. He gives us that variety. He gives us that... he's someone who can cause defenders problems. Particularly when he gets into central areas. And I think that's an aspect of the Pepe discussion that's interesting. So I think he's going to have a think about it. Is it time to do away with the back three, back five? Is it time to go to a back four? Proper back four, a 4-3-3 perhaps, or a 4-1-2-3, something like that, you know, on a consistent basis.
Well, I've got a question about that in a moment, but I'm just thinking, it's interesting because I agree with you, but I can definitely see Arteta's conundrum as well. Like, I can see that he thinks, I've put these foundations in place and I would much rather keep that and build the attack on top of it than do something which destabilizes what I've built so far. I'm not saying that's right, but I can definitely understand it. And I think the mistake Unai Emery made, because he actually did sort of do a similar thing at the start under Arteta, if I recall correctly, in that he heavily reduced the freedom in Arsenal's game, but also as the opponent's game. He applied quite a lot of structure, and the amount of sort of shots and excitement in games massively came down. And when he turned the pedal in another, you know, put the foot down on the pedal or swung the balance in the other direction, it all absolutely went to shit. Now, that doesn't mean that would happen again, and that's down to Arteta, but I can see why he might think, do you know what, it might take me a year to get this team to attack. But if it does, and it means I get to keep the defensive side, then by God, I'm going to do it that way.
I just don't think we can do what he wants to do when he talks about scoring 90 or 100 goals to be up there with the top teams. I don't think you can do it in the system that he's using.
Really? Even if you've got a different centre forward, a different centre midfielder, winger?
Well, I mean, I think if you've got a different centre forward, you're playing in a slightly different system, right? Mm. That's what I mean when I talk about Aubameyang. I think, look, if you had better players, you could probably do more. But we don't have that right now. We have to find a solution with the players that we have. There's no other way of doing it, you know? So I think it's the balance thing, right? It is. I see completely where you're coming from. And if I were him, I would probably be cautious as well. But I feel like there's only so long you can be hit over the head with a hammer before you move out of the way of the fucking hammer.
Yeah. I know. And he doesn't like losing games either. I mean, but I just wonder if... Yeah, I don't know. Basically, what I'm saying is I understand his caution, even though it is costing us. And it is costing us at the moment. But if there's... He has... That's his challenge, really. I mean, one of the things I was really interested about Arteta is that when it came to the summer... And this is something that hasn't really been talked about. he appointed a load of new coaches, and I found it fascinating that he went for junior people. Like, I just wondered if he might add a more senior voice to the guys he's already got. And I found it really telling that he was like, no, I'm going to bring in guys who are essentially kids in coaching terms.
That's, yeah. We had a question, I think it was on the Discord, from DJ Nolan. He says, does Arteta need to take a hard look at his coaching staff? We have a set piece coach, but have gone backwards there. He says, Leno has developed weak wrist punch syndrome, which hasn't been addressed. And the front three look clueless as to what they're doing. Is it all on Arteta's structure, or is his vision being fluffed by his support group? Yeah. And I, you know, he does have experienced coaches. He's got Albert Stivenberg, he's got Steve Round there. You know, who are senior coaches who've got plenty of experience. Of course, Stivenberg is off to manage Gareth Bale into the ground for Wales.
Into the ground, yeah, please. Yeah.
Good, good stuff. All part of the big, you know, Arsenal conspiracy theory dreamt up with the Welsh FA. But, you know, maybe there is an element of that. Maybe the coaches that he has are sort of grounding him or tethering him with the advice that they're giving him. Maybe they're saying, look, we can't do this, we can't do that, you've got to do it this way, otherwise blah blah blah.
Well, I also think, what do we know about Arteta so far? We know he's big on structure. We know, what are the key words we use about him? Patterns of play. And I think he is fearful. That's a strong word. I think he's wary of being able to build new patterns quickly. But I think he's going to have to. I mean, you know, the problem with the international break is you lose a load of players as well. I mean, slightly less than in the old days at Arsenal. But yeah, it is a really interesting one. I mean, what I was going to ask you, and I haven't seen this question specifically, but it's pretty much what everyone's asking anyway. How would you, if you were saying, I've got to rebuild this attack, I know we've had similar conversations before, but right now, if you had to rebuild it, how would you do it?
I would play with a back four. Mm-hmm. I would play with a midfield three. Mm-hmm. I would play Aubameyang at centre forward. I would play Pepe from the right. I would play Bukayo Saka from the left. I would think very strongly about using Rhys Nelson a bit more. I would think very strongly about what Gabriel Martinelli can bring to the team when he returns from injury. I know that's some way down the line. You know, I think...
And what would your midfield three be?
Partey. I think it would depend on the opposition, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I would consider a role for someone like Joe Willock. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm not saying he is the greatest player of all time, but I think when you're struggling to cause the opposition problems from an attacking perspective, having someone like him, in the same way that, you know, Aaron Ramsey used to cause the opposition problems with the timing of his movement into the box, you know, even if he doesn't get on the end of things, he takes players with him. It creates space, which you can use, you know. And what we have at the moment is this very rigid, very structured setup where players don't really move around a great deal. Maybe Aubameyang does, but nobody else really does, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to cause the opposition problems in that regard. So you're talking about Partey plus, you know, an Elneny. Like you said in the early, in the first part, you know, I think our setup and our approach in the big games, particularly away from home, is set. You know, we have found a way to be more competitive in those games. So there's not much you need to do to change there. But I think when you're at home and when the onus is on you to take the game to the opposition and to be a threat and to cause them hassle and problems and to make them think about what it is that they're having to do in a game, instead of just, like, you can coast through a game as a defender at the moment. You can coast through a game against Arsenal because you know what's going to happen and there's no variety to it. And who are the players in this squad who can provide a little bit of spark, a little bit of inspiration? I fully accept that our options are imperfect for various reasons. But I would rather see Nicolas Pepe lose the ball X amount of times, but still end the game with a goal and an assist, then see Willian keep the ball more often than not, but give it away at a crucial time and we still concede a goal. You know that way? I just think that there has to be... I think he's got to trust in some of the more... Maverick is not quite the right word, but to trust more in what those players can bring us from an attacking perspective, and realize that perhaps in someone like Partey, and if you can use a midfield like Partey and Elneny, I know it didn't really work yesterday, but you do have the ability to protect that back four better than you did.
Yeah. I think I would be inclined to have a similar shape. So I think I agree with you. I would have two deeper midfield players, Partey plus one. I'm not massively wedded to one of Xhaka, Ceballos or Elneny, to be honest with you. I think they have... You know, I think the difference between them isn't that enormous at times.
Mm.
I think ahead of that, Pepe from the right for sure for me, Aubameyang central, Saka left probably. But I think that what that system cries out for to me is, you know, a more advanced midfield player, someone who can offer you a linking position, you know, ability to maybe carry the ball, maybe receive it in... under pressure, you know, because those are things that Aubameyang in the central areas isn't probably going to give you quite as much. So I think Willock is an option. I also think Bukayo Saka could be really good in that position, actually. It raises a question of what you do from the left, and maybe that's solved a bit if Martinelli gets fit again.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of Saka in behind off the front man. I think he could play very well there.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that Arteta has been reluctant to use Aubameyang centrally, or maybe it's not one of the reasons, but one of the things he said about using Aubameyang centrally is that a really important part of that is having players who can deliver the ball to him in the areas in which he's dangerous, right?
Yeah.
I think his link-up play is better than people give him credit for. It's not the strongest part of his game, but the idea that he can't, like, receive the ball with his back to goal and make a pass and make a run and bring others into play, I think is absolutely absurd. It's like a complete falsehood. He can do it. It's just not the thing that he's best at. What he's best at is moving into the box and scoring goals. And where I find some encouragement is the fact that towards the end of last season, himself and Pepe combined, there were moments where Pepe created goals for Aubameyang, and I think Saka and Aubameyang can combine too. We've seen that, you know, over the last 12 months, that they have shown signs of a partnership. And I just feel like you're never going to know what these guys can produce unless you give them a couple of games. Or a couple of games, but give them some consistency in terms of team selection. Because we've done it with the others. We've done it with Lacazette. We've done it with Willian. It ain't working. So now what?
Can I do my crazy suggestion that won't happen?
Yeah.
Actually, shout out to Perry Kay on Twitter, who also suggested it. It's something I've been sort of secretly thinking and thinking, am I going to say this on a podcast? Okay, or do I want this to live with this? No, if I think about Aubameyang and his best performances for Arsenal, I actually believe, and my memory may play tricks on me, but I think his best performances for Arsenal came in a front two. And I think that there's a lot to be said for the possibility of getting him in a pair. Okay. And it doesn't have to be with Lacazette. You've got other options there.
Okay,
but I look at this Arsenal team, and I know it's not a fashionable formation, but I do think there is a possibility of a 4-4-2 shape that could be quite good. So you'd have your Partey and whoever next to him. You'd have Saka as your left midfielder, who can kind of do it all from that position. On the right hand side, I'm not sure yet. Maybe you've got Reece Nelson or something. Because I think even you can play Aubameyang and Pepe as a pair.
I was going to ask you, would you consider Pepe as somebody who could play in the centre?
And I think Aubameyang's great when you get people near him. I think it makes defenders, you know, it enables him to elude them more. It gives them more to think about. And I think, you know, there was that period where we played 3-5-2 under Emery where Aubameyang was red hot. I think his XG was highest in a front two than it is in any of his uses at Arsenal. And I mean, to be honest, I even think it could breathe some life into Lacazette. Because I think he's a second striker. He's a guy who looks better with a partner.
Mm.
I don't think it'll happen, but it's an idea.
Well, in the absence of anything else.
And in the absence of, you know, an obvious sort of number 10, you know, with the exception of the guys not registered. I don't know. I'd like to think that Arteta will at least explore these ideas, you know. Not because he's listening.
No, absolutely not. But
I don't think he'd be like, oh, James, actually, Steve and Albert, James made a good point on the Askcast Extra.
Yeah, let's try a 4-4-2. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
No, of course not.
Yeah. Look, he has to. He has to. No, I'm not saying he has to do what you're saying, but he has to do something.
What about this question?
Okay.
From the different knock at Diff Knock. And they say, hello, gents. At what point do we begin to worry about Aubameyang? Open play goals have completely dried up. He looked tired to me. Is this just a symptom of bad team performance or is there something more pernicious?
He looked absolutely miserable yesterday, didn't he? There was a moment where midway through the second half, the camera cut to him and it was raining and he looked bedraggled and he looked pissed off and he looked like a man who just wasn't enjoying his football. And I think, you know, when you're a striker and you don't score, that's obviously a weight on your mind. You don't enjoy yourself when you don't score and you're a striker. How many...
Does he get a pass? Do you know what I mean?
Does because he get he's a not- pass? Well, I mean, I think he had no shots yesterday. Is that right?
Yeah.
He's not the kind of player who is going to beat three men.
He's not Alexis Sanchez, is he?
No. He's not going to just keep knocking and knocking on the door until something opens up for him. He's a guy who relies on service. He relies on delivery. He relies on being given the ball in areas in which he's dangerous. And that can be right across that front three, you know? It's not simply a case that he can only do it from central areas. We've seen him score lots of goals from the left-hand side. But he didn't get any of the ball yesterday.
No.
I mean, you know, the one time he came forward was the chance that he created for Willian.
Yeah, I can barely remember.
Well, the one we talked about early on, you know. But apart from that, you know, he didn't get... sight of goal.
Wasn't it
at
his
all?
Cross for Willian again in the second half when he
was
it with his left foot? I think Aubameyang had gone down the right. They briefly swapped at that point. Yeah, I think so. But I mean, the funny thing is, him not getting the ball is not in itself a concern. Do you know what I mean? Like in theory, he doesn't need the ball like in possession. He needs to be on the end of stuff, and that's what we're worried about. I think that I think he does get a bit of a pass, to be honest with you, because he's not getting service. But I do think it is worth sort of highlighting and mentioning that we've put our money, we've put our investment in a player who isn't a guy who just produces magic out of nothing. Often he has done it, but it's not his game. He is a guy who relies on service. Therefore, if you're not serving him, you are losing money. I mean, someone like Alexis, you know, you can sort of bung him in any team, apart from Manchester United, it seems, and there's a chance he'll make something happen. That isn't what we've got in Aubameyang.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And we have to adapt to that.
It was an Aubameyang cross from the right-hand side.
Yeah.
I feel sad watching him putting crosses for gimps like Willian to slash at. Yeah. Is it time? Can we be worried? Yeah. I mean, of course you can be worried.
We have to be worried. I mean, you know, it's probably the team's fault.
Yeah. But I think it is. But like, What was I going to say there? I've completely forgotten what I was going to say.
Well, you know, this is what we spent our money on.
Yeah,
so.
But he hasn't like forgotten how to score goals, and he hasn't fallen off like the metaphorical physical cliff in 4 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it is, right? Because it was only a short time ago when we were all delighted he was signing because he'd been scoring lots of goals. He was exciting and, you know, fun to watch and all of those things. So I think he is a victim of the system, which is why I think the system needs the rethink that it needs.
Yeah, the system should be geared to provide him with service. And at a certain point that was working. It's now not at all.
Mm.
And that means we need to, you know, open up the gearbox.
Let me have a look here. I'm doing that thing again where I don't have my glasses. Metaferso on the Discord says, Arteta isn't completely blameless from yesterday and this season's lack of creativity, but is our failure over the years to adequately replace the likes of Ramsey, Alexis, Cazorla, Wilshire and Ozil costing us. Even poor players like Mkhitaryan and Iwobi at least linked the midfield and attack.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about Olivier Giroud, didn't we? As a player that we sort of bizarrely found ourselves missing in the game. And I think, you know, there are countless others. I mean, some of those names mentioned, Arsenal used to be very well stocked with, you know, there's a time we would have probably turned up our nose at Ross Barkley and Jack Grealish and thought, no, thank you.
No. Speak for yourself. I've always fancied a little bit of Jack Grealish. Can't say, you know, Ross Barkley is somebody I've ever pined over, but Grealish, gimme.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I do think, look, clearly we had the question, is it sort of Arteta's system or is it the players? And I think it is a little from column A, a little from column B. I mean, we are missing a type. Mesut Ozil is the closest to that type we have in the squad, but there are lots of reasons that he isn't playing. You know, it's sort of almost a pointless conversation at this point because we can't bring him back in. So,
yeah,
you know, they know there's a player missing. They tried to sign one in the summer. They didn't get him. And we could desperately do with that, but is it a failure of the squad? I do think what we've done is we've not added enough players of certain types. I mean, people who carry the ball are in short supply in this squad. Feels like it's Pepe and Saka, really, and to an extent Bellerin, but so that's been an issue. But I do think the system is part of it. I mean, I don't think these are bad players. You know what I mean? I'm not convinced they're worse players than Aston Villa's players for the most part, you know?
I think they should be capable of more and better,
on
a consistent basis. So, here's a couple of these. I'll give you two of these. Stephen, who's at Mr. Steglass on Twitter, says, Is what Arteta is trying to do counterintuitive? Teams are beginning to realise we're a blunt attacking force, becoming more ambitious and direct as a result. And Rafi Schreiber, who's at Rafi Schreiber 14, says, is it possible that because Arteta's barks can now be heard by the players, he's more reticent to make substitutions as he feels like he can influence the game from his box or his technical area? It feels like he isn't quick to turn to the bench.
I mean, we touched on that, didn't we? The idea of control and how he's going to have to learn to let go of that, whatever happens. Is he slow to turn to the bench? Maybe. Like I said, I wanted him to be a bit more dramatic with his change at half time, but an injury kind of impeded his efforts there a little bit. So I have a small amount of sympathy. I mean, maybe he wouldn't have made a change at all. In which case, I would have been pretty worried.
Mm.
What was the first question again?
The first one is like, is his approach counterintuitive in that teams know that we're not great from an attacking perspective, therefore they can feel emboldened themselves?
Yeah, maybe. But then all these things are related. So if they feel emboldened, that theoretically should provide us with more opportunity to exploit, you know, in defence. And it's difficult to unpick the sort of chicken and egg of that. And I think that
it is, yeah.
Arteta would say we have to focus on our performance and we have to focus on what we're doing. And, you know, I think he would be right. I think that's what Arsenal need to do. Then think about what they're actually trying to do and you know, be proactive in that instance.
Mm.
Onkar Redcar on Twitter, that who's at TheGunaBoy49, says, your thoughts on how we should be less reliant on Saka? He is a super talent, but Arteta should be using him more wisely. And then he adds, also, where the heck has Ainsley Maitland-Niles gone? Do you worry about Saka? I mean, he got kicked to death last night from what I could see, and it's happening more and more.
Do I worry about him? I suppose it's just a consequence of him being a good player, and you can't on one hand say, I want the team to be more creative and then advocate the removal of one of our more creative players. You know, somebody who's got probably more assists over the last while than anybody else, maybe? I don't know what the...
Yeah, he's just ahead of Pepe, I think.
So I get that he's young. I get that there's going to be some inconsistency with him, but I don't really worry about that. I mean, I just want to see him maybe in a slightly different position, you know?
Mm.
And I think one of the... somebody else... let me see if I can find it here. It occurred... I noticed it as well. Vince Ives on Twitter... at Vince Ives, said, the number of good runs Saka made in behind last night that were ignored blew my mind. So frustrating. And I think that was something I noticed a couple of times as well, that he does have this movement and this desire to get in behind, and the final pass wasn't there. There was one from Elneny, I think, and there was another one from Tierney who could have played him down there. You know, I think he is the kind of player who can make things happen when he does get in behind. I just don't know if we're giving him the service that he needs. But, you know, if we're talking about making this team more attacking, but also talking about leaving Saka out, who do you bring in? Who's going to replace him?
Yeah, I think that's very difficult. And I think, ideally, I think there would be slightly less burden on him.
Mm.
But that's only really a situation we can resolve in the transfer market. I think you're right, with the players we have available, we're sort of obliged to pick him. But there we go.
Yeah, it's when you look at the fixtures, when we come back, we've got Leeds away, Wolves at home, Tottenham away.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, I know there's not a lot of easy games in this league.
I was just going to say, there's no easy games.
No.
But that's a...
There really aren't.
And it's... Yeah.
That's. I think that's how it's going to feel pretty much all season, by the way. I mean, I quite like this question from Sharif on Twitter, who said, as it will be a pod of doom, I'll ask something positive. Are you looking forward to seeing Arteta fix this? And then he says, it's easy to doubt, but he has shown he can create new plans with the same players, leading to the cup wins, etc.
Yeah, goes back to what I said right at the very start. Like, if there is some optimism for me, it's that this is so obviously wrong or in need of fixing that he's going to have to do something. Like, I think if we'd, you know, taken a 1-0 last night, we wouldn't see much change. You know, if we'd won 1-0, everyone's happy with the result, if not necessarily the performance. I think... Is it a slap in the face moment? Maybe it is. Sometimes you need a short, sharp shock. You know, and it's also worth remembering in the doom of this morning and how miserable we feel, and rightly so and reasonably so, given the way Arsenal played last night. This time last week, we were very happy because we'd won a big game, you know? There's still a lot of work to do, and I know that we can sort of swing from one extreme to the other in terms of how we're feeling about things and what the potential is. But I am kind of looking forward to seeing what he does, because I think he is here for, you know, there's a lot of faith in him at the club.
I
think it's really premature to start talking about sacking a manager after 12 months, particularly if you've been looking for a manager to come in and sort out some of the things that he has sorted out, right?
Mm. I think we'd have to be in a relegation fight, to be honest, for the board, for the owners to sack him. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it is the archetypal. It's going to take time to fix this, but we're going to lose our shit after every single game and every single result, one way or the other. Either too much positivity or too much negativity. Right. Mm. So I think that's just a consequence of the world that we're living in and the way that football is being experienced at this moment. And I'm not telling anybody that they're wrong to feel the way that they feel. That is just the reality of what we are going to have to deal with as fans, as people who talk about the game. And, you know, for Mikel Arteta and for every football manager, it is going to be the same kind of thing, you know. So yeah. I am hopeful because I liked, what's the phrase that people kept using? Direction of travel. I think that was something that was brought up more than once. I'm hopeful that he can implement some positive changes based on the reality check that we got against Aston Villa.
Yeah, and to an extent, by the way, I do think some of this is inevitable. I saw this tweet from Bergby who said, it took Arsene almost a decade to become the manager that took over Arsenal. He said, you pay for young players with points. We are paying for Mikel with points. And I think that's probably true. I think we are watching a manager learn some lessons. Mm. But that is the kind of, that's the ride Arsenal have hitched themselves to. You know, they've appointed Arteta. They knew exactly his level of experience. They knew what they were getting. There are going to be bumps. But the last time Arsenal lost 3-0 at home, as far as I'm aware, was the game where Mikel Arteta came with Manchester City and sat on the touchline and watched a team absolutely beset with problems. And what was incredibly impressive when he came into the job and swapped dugouts was how many of those problems he seemed to fix with relatively small changes. You know, and careers were revived and fortunes changed, and he did show himself to be a problem solver in that moment. He found a way for a seemingly broken team to function. And here we are after another 3-0 defeat. And you know, Mikel needs to go back to his drawing board. Yep. But I don't doubt that if he brings a fresh approach to it, you know, relatively, I don't doubt he can find solutions.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hopeful of. That's what I'm hopeful of. Like, you're going to have these moments which are important in your career as a coach and as a manager. And it's, you know, do you double down and say, no, the thing that's not working will work if we just keep doing this? Or do you reassess? And that's where I'm going to be very curious to see what kind of approach we take for a game against Leeds away from home. Obviously, there's this the Bielsa element of this as well, which is very interesting. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what he does. But I hope he can have a positive impact on the team, and that some of the lessons that have been applied to us in recent times will be learned. You know, so. So there you go.
We shall see.
We shall see. But look, we better leave it there for today because I've got to get the podcast out. You know, people need to share in the doom and everything else. But hopefully we provided a slight silver lining, a little chink of light towards the end of it. We've got 2 weeks to wait for our next game. And yeah, I don't know what else to say now at this point.
You know, who knows? Enjoy the international break, everybody. Yes. I'm sure it'll be great fun.
It will be. Thomas Partey won't be going away with Ghana because of his injury. So that's, on one hand, good news, but it depends how long he's going to be out for. We'll have to wait and see. But look, we'll discuss all that on the site, on the blog, on the podcast and everything else. In the meantime, thank you as ever for being here. Thanks for listening. And we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.